Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Nerd Speak. Today just became January 11th. I'm Adam Kovlik, joined by Jay Patel. Today's episode, we have some questions that we're going to answer, depending on how fast those go. We may touch on more of the broader football stories, but maybe not. Speaking of, Georgia just won national championship. Good for them. Shout out Stetson Bennett.
He looks like an investment banker.
Bro, like, when Georgia, when they made that great 40-yard touchdown.
Yeah.
Like, I saw a flag was on the ground, and they panned to him, and I assume the flag, he knows the flag's on Georgia or something, because the man showed no emotion.
Yeah.
And then they say offsides, and they go back to him, and he still has no emotion.
I'm yeah.
Like, bro, he's happy. Like,
him and Bryce Young. Bryce Young doesn't show any emotion.
It's so weird.
He looks like a mix of Jordan Poole and Tua. Like, I don't know. It's like, feels really obvious.
Yeah.
Yeah, right? Like, yeah.
I mean, you're not wrong.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was a great game.
It was.
There's Kirby Smart yelling, "Get down, get down." As they ran it back for a pick
that,
six.
That same play of Bama, I don't know the receiver's name, but number 84, he laid out like a full hit stick on some dude going back. Yeah, he looked pissed.
He was not happy with the with what he knew was happening. But yeah, moving on to the questions. First question. Wait, one second. Sorry. Let me just get the tweet up so I know who asked the question. Give him a little shout out. Yeah, so first one is from Jacob Siegel. Said, if you could run any team in any sport, given their position now, which team would be the most fun? Basically, which team are you picking in franchise mode, not necessarily your favorite team? Ajay, what do you guys say for this answer?
All right, so I say let's do one for each major sport. I feel like that's best, probably.
That's what I did.
Yeah, so football, I would say, I know with recent events, people might not like it, but I'd probably say the Chargers right now. Just because they have a crazy amount of cap space, I think like $70 million going into next year. They have a top five quarterback in the NFL, and they have a couple pieces on that defense, which is probably where you would work on the most. Baseball, I'd probably say the Mets, just because you have Steve Cohen as your owner, so you can spend as much as you want. And basketball, huh. I don't know. Basketball, I'd have to think about. Grizzlies would be fun, I feel like. I feel like they have a really solid team right now. Ja Morant and Desmond Bane's been playing really well, which is pretty neat to see. If not them, then I'd just go bandwagon. I'd say the Warriors.
Yeah, those are all really good. I like all those. For football, I said the Niners.
Mm.
I really like Trey Lance, and I think they have the coach. So I think once you and I think the Chargers are in a similar spot where the two hardest things to get in the NFL is a good quarterback and a good head coach.
Yeah.
And the Chargers have Herbert and Staley. I mean, Staley I think is a good head coach. And then I love Kyle Shanahan, and I think Trey Lance is gonna be really good under Shanahan. So I think they have the QB and the coach, and I love, and their defense is fantastic. Like, I think when Lance develops that team, and I just love watching Debo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk. That's gonna be a fun team for a while.
For sure.
Baseball, I see the Blue Jays. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about going with the Mets because, like you said, like being able to just spend whatever you want, it's fun. But the Blue Jays, I mean, they just have an insanely good young core. They have a good farm system to add to, you know, Vlad, Bichette, Biggio, etc. Nate Pearson, who's a freak. And their owners finally seem willing to spend. So when you add all that together with the San George Springer, I think they're gonna be a good team for a while. And the NBA, I said the Hawks, because I think you got the star, Trae Young's a star, and they just built a really good young core around him. That eventually, when they want a superstar to add with Trae, they're going to be able to make that trade happen, because, I mean, especially there's some reports John Collins may want out. He could be a centerpiece in a big trade. Like, there's a lot of ways for them to get that. And just the Trae Capella combo is just, it's unguardable.
Yeah, definitely.
So I love
think also, now that I'm thinking about it, baseball wise, the Marlins would be really cool.
I always want to like every time I'm playing a franchise mode, like this question was like, you know, most fun, but every time I play a franchise mode, I want to do a rebuild.
Yeah, no, exactly.
So the Marlins are like one of those teams where they just have so many good young pieces, and they're probably not winning World Series in the next couple of years, but they have, I mean, that pitching staff is ridiculous. Exactly.
They already have like 8 guys you could pencil in the MLB rotation.
Yeah.
And they definitely have the prospects coming up on, like, you know, the offensive side. I don't know. I feel like that'd be fun.
Yeah. And I know you mentioned hockey because I know you're not into it, but I think hockey is either the Rangers or the Ducks. Both teams have insane young cores. And the Rangers is just, they're maybe I'm biased there, but they're fun as hell.
Yeah,
and
no,
they have so many good young players.
Yeah. Hockey, I don't really have a choice. I just don't follow it enough. But I have seen the Rangers have been, they're what, like top 3 in the league or something right now? Top 2?
Yeah, they. I don't know where their exact ranking is right now, but they're around there. They've been playing fantastic, and hopefully they keep going. Losing 2-0 right now. Maybe there's a comeback in them. But moving on. This one from Wolves Culture. Do you think analytics are more advanced in the NFL or in the NBA?
That's a good one.
I really like this one.
All right, I feel like you can take this 2 ways, but I will say I think it's more advanced in the NFL right now. So I think the first thing that matters is game states. And NFL, it's not a continuous state of action. Where the NBA, you know, it's nonstop movement. Like, sure, you have, like, take it out, inbound the ball. But it's a lot more flowy compared to NFL. So you are able to break it down. And then the other thing I think that's important is I don't think the NBA has a big data bowl comparable. Because in football, like, sure, it's not the NFL, but like, you have college students, college grads crowdsourcing these ideas, and teams are using those ideas. Like, I know Joe Andruzzi just got picked up by the Arizona Cardinals today as like an analyst. He's put together 2 really good submissions of the big data rule. So I don't know, it's a tough question. You could definitely go a couple ways with that, but right now I'd say the NFL.
I think it's really close because both of these sports, I mean, like, again, we're just talking about public data, obviously. But both of these sports, you know, baseball is so much easier to come up with stats for because everyone has the same goal on offense. Like, your goal on offense is to, you know, score runs. And everyone's trying to do the same thing, where in football and basketball, everyone has different roles. And, you know, how do you quantify a guy like Draymond Green versus a guy like Steph? And I think that from what I've seen, so the NFL definitely has better player tracking data that I've seen. So I think they're better there, but also a lot of NFL stats that are available to the public are very much based via PFF. And PFF is, I love PFF, I think they're great, but it is still an eye test thing. There's a lot of really hard things to quantify, especially, you know, just there's the NFL, I feel like, has more guys doing roles that don't directly impact where the ball is versus the NBA, which has, you know, most guys in one particular play are not setting screens. Most guys, you know, your true shooting percentage is something that is really good at figuring out if this is a guy you want on your team or something like that. So it's really close. And, like, you know, because the NFL, one of the best stats is EPA per play. But that's still it's a very young and raw stat that will get improved as time goes on. It's a fantastic stat.
Yeah.
But it's just, like, it's hard to, I think the NFL is just really hard to, and both are, but the NFL has proven really hard to individualize things. Yeah. And to say, okay, if we take this one guy off of this team, where are they?
Yeah, I think also another part that matters when you talk about how advanced analytics are is how well they're doing in bridging, like, the disconnect between the people who actually support them and, you know, the older people or, like, just scouts, old general managers, reporters that might not be so analytically inclined. And I think the NBA has done a lot better job of that, I want to say, because at least, like, this might be, like, recency bias. It probably is. But you don't get, like, I feel like you don't hear reporters or, like, people yelling about, like, oh, Steph Curry made the wrong decision to shoot a three instead of a two, compared to, like, if you look at Brandon Staley on Sunday night, he got killed for taking a timeout that I still think had no effect on that game. So it's weird because NBA, I feel like you can use analytical information a lot more hand-in-hand with, like, the film stuff. Because, first of all, it's only five guys, so it's a lot easier to track each five of them, see what their role is on each play. Football, you have 11 guys. None of them have the same job. It's always going to be different. It's just, it's a lot more complex than, you know, we can put into, like, a stat right now, like, one overarching stat. Like, I know we've definitely used PFF WAR, like, a lot to try to, you know, say, all right, here's how much this player's worth. But that's still a really flawed process right now, so it's an interesting question. I still think we're quite a far way away from the NFL reaching, like, MLB levels, or the NBA getting there still. So, I don't know. It's interesting, though. It's definitely worth the discussion.
I mean, like, you even look at the MLB, and the MLB has fantastic, like, unbelievable analytics. But when you talk about, you know, every team is based on analytics, those analytics are very much hitting analytics more than everything. Then pitching analytics are still very good. And then there's a big gap, and defensive analytics are solid, but depending on where you go, you see so many different stats. So, you know, and defense is one of the more variable things in baseball. There are very few things in baseball that have significant variables, and defense is the one that above the other two, above hitting and pitching, whereas football and basketball have just so many. And like you said about the disconnect between analytics people and old school people, I also think that, I mean, and you kind of said this, where basketball analytics aren't, like, there's no, like, the main thing that you've seen a lot of is, you know, shoot threes over deep twos. And, like, yeah, like, you know, even if you're just a film guy, you're like, okay, obviously there's similar percentage shots, I'm going to try to take the one that can give me an extra point. Whereas in football, you know, go for it more on fourth down, and, you know, running backs are less valuable and stuff. Like, these are things that have been ingrained in football for years that are now being switched, versus basketball, where, you know, I think analytics have had a lot to do with it, but Steph Curry is the reason that three-pointers are the name of the game today, more than I think analytics. And I think, you know, Curry created a new generation of basketball players that want to just be Steph Curry,
yeah,
by being the greatest shooter of all time.
I still think, like, my bad, but I still think, like, the whole three-point revolution did happen before Steph. It was just, like, he's the guy most of us remember now, like, at least in our age range, like, he's the guy we think of, which makes sense. Like, it's not a bad thing, but, like, guys like Ray Allen, you know, they were definitely doing their thing even before, like, Steph came into the league. So it's, like, fair to say, like, Steph was, like, a catalyst for it. I don't think he's, like, the only reason, though.
I think Steph turned it from being a good shooter helps you to, okay, I want to learn to be able to just pull up from everywhere on the court. Like, Ray Allen's, like, probably the second greatest shooter of all time. I think third. I think Clay's second. But he was just, like, you know, he was a normal, insane three-point shooter. Steph was just shooting just absurd shots. And, like, and when I was growing up, you know, everyone wanted to shoot threes. Like, when you play when you were younger, I feel like that had a lot to do with it. So I think that it's really close. And I agree that football analytics are like, you don't see a lot of basketball people talking about nerds except for KD. Because I feel like you don't notice the impact nearly as much as you do in football, where, like, you see a massive disconnect between Brandon Staley and Joe Judge. You can easily tell that difference.
Plus, like, NBA, most of, like, the advanced metrics, right, that try to qualify a player's worth, they're all based on plus minus. Sure, like, positional adjustments, you know, team adjustments, all that come into play. But, like, Raptor, I'm pretty sure DPM, like, EPM, the Darko metric I've seen, a lot of that's just based on, like, box plus minus, which, it's not crazy advanced for, like, someone who might not be familiar with it at all to understand. But if you go into, like, NFL, right, and you start to say, all right, hey, like, here's this guy's big time throw percentage, here's this guy EPA per play. Like, that's a lot harder to explain to like a non analytically inclined fan.
Yeah. No, 100%.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think like right now, I'd say the NFL is, I'd say it's a lot easier to get into it in the NBA. In say like 5-10 years, I think the NFL is going to be a lot far ahead of the NBA. Just I don't want to sound like a pessimist. I just don't know how much more they can do in the NBA. Like, I think some of the part we'll see next in the NBA is when you start getting into like roster construction and maximization, like lineup optimization, that type of stuff. We haven't seen as much, but NFL, there's just so much left to be done.
I think the NBA is going to be the next step is to go, and hockey is not great with analytics, especially in terms of old hockey heads versus analytics guys. But a big thing, the main thing in hockey is expected goals, where every shot, basically, if you have a 20% chance of making that shot, whether or not you make it, you get 0.2 expected goals. So, and so that's where the NBA can go, where it's more about, it's less about the what you're making and more about the chances you're creating, and especially defensively. You know, when you're on the court, are you creating better chances for your team than the other team is? So, but it's still, I agree, it's tough for the NBA. And I also think that, like, if we talk about quarterbacks, quarterbacks are way above the NBA. Analyzing quarterbacks in terms of analytics, I think, is easier, is better in football than there's any position in the NBA to analyze. But offensive linemen, you have it's really tough, especially to, like, an offensive line itself is not that easy, but especially one offensive lineman, it's really tough. Speaking of offensive linemen, this question from Mr. Fredo. Saw a Jay's article, read that, on the importance of a center. What about a ranking of the O-line? So I assume that just the O-line groups, not right tackle, yeah, just left tackle, because it depends on, quarterback.
Yeah, that's it's tough. Like, I'm not going to act like I know the answer to that. My best order would be, I don't want to just say centers, tackles, and guards, because I feel like the quality of them does matter. So if you have an elite center, right, I'm taking that over an elite guard. But if you have like an average guard or like an above average guard, I'm taking that over a center. If you have a good tackle, I'm taking that over like a good interior lineman. If you have an average interior lineman, I'm taking that over a tackle.
Yeah. So I think it's about, this is a tough question because it's really tough to just say what's the most important, because in your thing you showed it's centers, guards, tackles. But, tackles are also seemingly much harder to find than a really good center. So
I think it's the other way around.
Really?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I don't have it on me just because.
So do you think, what I mean is, like, do you think it's easier to find an average center or an average tackle?
It's easier to find an average center.
So then, so that's kind of where I should have gone with that. So, like, that's why, if you have the third pick, take this draft for example. Giants are on the clock at 5. Evan Neal, Tyler Linderbaum, both there. And you say that both of them are going to be good. You probably want to take Neal over Linderbaum because there's a better chance of you finding a solid center than there is of you finding a solid tackle. And you need a solid tackle or else you end up with what the Giants had this year with Nate Solder and Matt Parrott.
Yeah. Plus, the other thing you have to keep in mind there is the rookie pay. You'd be paying Linderbaum basically top 5 money, whereas Neal would be getting like an average contract for a tackle, I'm pretty sure. So that's also important. So I think like tackle's like one of the hardest positions to be like really good at. But if you have a liability or like someone who's like just average at it, it's fine. Like, you can get away with that. The other thing is, like, you have to keep in mind, you do have 2 tackles, 2 guards, but you only have like 1 center, obviously. Mm. So if you can get like an elite center, like this is like the common example I use, but like it works. Like, the Chiefs getting Creed Humphrey this year, like, he's been a top 3 center in football, I'm pretty sure. And I don't know, like, it did wonders for that O-line. It did wonders for Mahomes. So I don't know. It's iffy.
Yeah, I mean, like for me, the dream scenario would be one of the top tackles and then trading back for Linderbaum even, because a center is just a great anchor of an offensive line, and it's just this, just consistent solid thing. Because you watch plays this year with the Giants, and I forget Billy Price was at center, and there are just plays where it got blown up before it started, and I mean that also had to do with the other like three of the other four linemen, but as a whole, it's really tough. All three in the end, you need good talent at all three, but I feel like I've seen more late round centers and guards become good than
Viable,
late
yeah,
round
as
tackles.
opposed to tackles.
Because like Matt Paire was in the third round, and that was a developmental pick that didn't work out. Versus Nick Gates was a I mean, he wasn't great, but he was a solid center, and he was I think he was undrafted. So it's like I feel like they just seem to be easier to not have liabilities at those positions. But as you've shown, the position in and of itself, guards are more important and centers are more important. But if you're going from a draft pick wise, you do take tackles earlier than the other two, is where I stand on that.
I don't know, it's there's like just so much left to be done in terms of like evaluating aligned players. And like the other thing is like you have to keep in mind that the five guys aren't just protecting by themselves usually. Like the occurrence like of a chip block or like a tight end blocking too is really like higher than we think it is probably. So like you can kind of masquerade your tackles under, a chip block or something like that. You can't help a guard or a center as much as like you can a tackle. Like you can start double teaming, then you have to have good tackles. So it's like just basically the O-line's like a weak link position. You'd rather have five average players than like four great ones and one, really bad player. Like the Giants, I believe they have that problem right now. Like Will Hernandez is the worst guard in football by a far mile. And they put him out there almost every single week, and it's not a surprise that their O-line is as bad as it is.
Well, the Giants also have this nice problem where they have four bad players and one good
No,
one.
definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, they need to make some changes. Yeah, moving
I mean, to
on
like
to
sum that
our
up, basically,
finisher.
like I'd say if you're disregarding pay scale and stuff like that, I'd go tackle, center, guard, just like in terms of like positional value, which one's most valuable. But if you start bringing in pay scale, how much you're paying them, stuff like that, I'd say center, tackle, guard, probably.
Yeah, I had a tackle center guard on mine.
Yeah.
All right, so this one from Ryan Garcia. What's the most overlooked metric in baseball? I said ground ball percentage and just soft contact as a whole. I feel like there's this very big, there's this idea, and it does make sense. If you strike a guy out, literally nothing bad can happen. But strikeout heavy pitchers tend to give up a lot of hard contact and a lot of home runs and often walk a lot, but you try to avoid that obviously. Just these three true outcome pitchers. But when a like last season when Jameson Taillon was pitching fantastic for the Yankees, it was fully because he it wasn't his strikeouts or walks, it was his ground, it was soft contact. Like he turned into just a contact menace, and like that is so one. I mean, obviously it's great, and it's reliant more on defense. Obviously you need a good defense behind a soft contact pitcher, but the Yankees seem to be on this soft contact, they seem to target soft contact guys. Like Clay Holmes and Jolie Rodriguez, both at the trade deadline, were high ground ball rate guys. Zach Britton, obviously, like because also when these soft contact guys, when they lose it, it's usually a slower burn, and you have more time to get them out of the game versus something like Gerrit Cole when he unraveled into the Red Sox. It was bang, 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 and all of a sudden you're down four runs. So I think that I'm not saying that soft contact guys should be prioritized over high strikeout guys because, again, striking a guy out is the best thing you can do. But I think that it's a. I don't think that they get the respect that they deserve in the analytics community. I think that because a lot of analytics don't really tend to go in their favor often, because a lot of analytics, pitch analytics especially, are 3-2 outcome based and not based on contact. There are some that are, but a lot aren't, and that's why, that's why I think ground ball rate is something that should really be factored in decisions.
Yeah, no, definitely. I'd say I'll give 2, I think. So one is more in terms of just like still bridging that gap between, you know, analytically inclined fans and like non-analytically inclined fans, which I think is just OPS and OPS plus still. Like, I know like we obviously have weighted runs created plus and WOBA and all that, but OPS still does like a great job at just like
100%.
Illustrating, you know, players' performance. And if we bring in the OPS plus, it's still really simple to understand. You know, it's just normalizing it on a scale of all league hitters. Like, it's not crazy like advanced for someone who's unfamiliar with it to understand, and it does a great job of just depicting performance, I'd say. And then another one I'd say is going against kind of what you said, but whiff rates for pitchers. Just because, like, if you can miss bats, like, you're doing something right. It's really that simple to me. And, like, I know everyone starts talking about, like, their skill indicative ERA and, like, their XFIP and all that. But, like, if you can just boil it down to, like, something a lot simpler that's easy for other people to understand again. If you can just tell them, all right, we want our pitchers to miss bats as much as possible. That's what we're looking for. And it's not like that doesn't indicate success. Like, if you miss bats, you're likely a good pitcher. So I think that could be something we could talk about a little more when we're saying, like, all right, I like this pitcher. But there's, I think, like, in baseball especially, like, you need to use more than one metric. You can't get away with just using one. It's not going to work.
Especially for pitching.
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah, 100%. And I think that, like, the biggest way to bridge that gap for analytics and old school baseball people is to show an analytic that reaffirms what they think, what they know. And they know striking a guy out pitching is good. So obviously, and getting a swing and miss is always a good thing. So yeah. Whiff rate is obviously good. And I 100% agree with you with what you said about OPS and OPS plus. Like, I've seen people just absolutely rip on OPS. Like, and it's not a perfect stat. It's nowhere near it. WOBA is much better. But usually if you look at, like, WOBA leaders versus OPS leaders, they're pretty similar.
Really similar.
Like it's fine for comparing two players. And, like, I understand, you know, it uses total bases and all this stuff. But it still uses on-base percentage, which is a fantastic stat.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very, very, very easy to understand because it's been in the league. It's been used for a long time. And there's just, and OPS Plus is just very simple. And like you said, like, it's very good at bridging that gap. So yeah. There's just no reason for it to get the hate that it gets. Like, I mean, I wouldn't use it to analyze guys over weighted runs created plus, because I think that's just a better version of OPS mm-hmm. plus. But I wouldn't, like, if someone brought it to me in an argument, I wouldn't say, oh, that's a bad stat.
Yeah. At the same time, too, I think walk rates for hitters help a lot.
Yeah, walk rate's great.
Because that's almost like, no, well, you can get out, you can get a hit, you can get a walk, right? Like, those, like, the three outcomes as a hitter. And if you can do one of those really well, like, you're probably doing something right. So I just feel like if we kind of take a step back from, like, the analytics currently to help bridge that gap and, like, just kind of say, all right, walk rate, all right, OPS, like, ground ball percentage, all that stuff. If we can focus on, like, a single component, make that really understandable to everyone, then move to another,
yeah,
you know, then, like, build the whole thing together.
That's the thing. I think that's why that I think that's a reason that a lot of people are anti-analytics in baseball, because it started slow
mm-hmm.
and then caught pace so quickly. Yeah. Now every team uses it, and now there's just so many advanced stats coming out
yeah.
that people who are still, you know, trying to grasp batting average not being used are being asked to, you know, look at ex-WOBA, and it's like, yeah. Let's calm down, and, like, yeah. You have to explain things.
It's genuinely, easier. Like, if you're not someone who's familiar with like the math concepts or the just analytics in baseball, it's really hard to become accustomed to it. Like, I get it. Like, it's not like, all right, you need to know how to do this stuff. It genuinely is like a harder thing to do. I do have one more stat, batting average on balls in play, or BABIP, because a lot of people always assume that's just going to, you know, come back to the mean, going to regress. But there are traits a pitcher or a batter can have to have a high BABIP or a low BABIP. Like, if you look at a guy like Nick Madrigal, for example, like, he's always going to have a high BABIP because he hits, like, soft ground balls that get through, like, soft line drives, they get through. So you can't just assume everything's going to regress back to the mean.
Yeah, speaking of that, that actually goes to my answer on Jacob Siegel, and this is our last question, but it's, as a piggyback, what's the most overused metric in baseball by analytics people specifically? So not batting average, QB or pitcher wins, et cetera, something analytics-based. He said in all of sports, but my answer is in baseball.
Okay.
And, okay, so this is not to say that this is a bad stat in the slightest. I think it's a fantastic stat, but I think that people very much overuse xWOBA as this idea that, like you said, everyone's just going to regress back to the mean.
Mm-hmm.
When there are guys who are consistently underperforming or consistently overperforming, so it's not just, oh, he's overperforming, he's going to come back. Like, you know, like Gary Sanchez, for example, has been, in 2018, he was 39 points under he underperformed by 39 points, then the next year by 23, the next year by 41, next year by 22. Like, he just underperforms because xWOBA has a lot, you know, some of it's based in speed, and he's a slow player. Alex Bregman consistently overperforms, and because, you know, he plays in that ballpark. Like, I understand why people sometimes will use it, and it does have its benefits, especially if someone is insanely overperforming or underperforming, like Miguel Andujar, for example. But it's a real. It's not that like. I think analytics people as a whole can sometimes be a lit, and I know that the analytics are about predictive, but they can be a little caught up in these predictive stats over results-based stats, where the, you know, a guy for 3 years has bad results, good predictive stats. He may never get those results because there may be something about the stat that is that you're not considering in his game.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe the opposite. Zach Britton, for example, his predictive stats are consistently horrid, and his ERA, I know relief ERA is not great, but his overall stats are consistently quite good.
Yeah.
And that's because he's a high ground ball rate, but at this point doesn't strike out a lot of guys, walks a lot. Those are things that you'd be like, this is unsustainable, but for him it's sustainable. So I think that, and again, predictive stats, like, analytics are about prediction. That's what data science is. It's not about just looking at the results, but the results can sometimes help you. I think the results sometimes need to be used more in the predictive stats.
I don't even. Yeah, I think like it's not just results. It's just like context.
Yeah.
Like, you can't just use, which is why I'm gonna complain about people overusing weighted runs created plus. Because you can't just use, I know it does a really good job of like encompassing a player's production in one stat. There's so much more to that though. Like, you need to look at like their fly ball rates, their ground ball rates, just how hard are they hitting the ball. Like, you can, like, even like Andujar's rookie year, right? Where he had like 120 weighted runs created plus, I'm pretty sure. Like, you could look at that year and you could tell like for the future just based on like how much he was pulling or hitting ground balls and line drives, not lifting the air, not hitting as 2% hard.
2% walk rate.
Yeah, like, there's a lot more to it than just, like, one stat like that. So I think in baseball, at least, I would say weighted runs created plus. And then to go with another sport, I'm going to harp on PFF grades because they leave out, like, it's the best we can do right now, so I don't fault people for using it. There's still so much context they're leaving out. Like, if you want to use it for a QB, fine. A wide receiver, I'm fine with that. When you get to, like, the trenches, like O-line, D-line, really iffy. Like, D-line, okay. O-line, I think it's really hard to be satisfied with PFF grades. Cornerbacks, they're only grading them when they're targeted. So there's so much there. Like, if you have a guy that's not getting targeted, And Blake, the times he does get targeted, you know, it's very rare, but say he gets cooked, he's going to have a bad PFF grade, even though he's rarely being targeted. Like, there's a fundamental issue there. Safeties, it's just hard to judge a football player's role right now into, like, one final number. So I think, like, yeah, use them. Like, just context is, like, literally the main thing, because everything you do needs context. It's really that simple.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big thing in analytics as a whole and stats as a whole, where, you know, you have to remember, I mean, if it's sports, it's more so you just have to remember that everyone's job is different.
Yeah.
In football specifically. Like, you know, the safety on one particular play and the cornerback on that same play may have two completely different jobs. And then in real life, it's also, you know, it's when you talk about stats, it's like these are, you know, there's people behind these stats. And that's why, like, and I'm a very analytically inclined person. I mean, I want to go into stats as my job. I obviously, like, believe in the power of statistics. But qualitative data is extremely beneficial to those same stats. And, you know, context in a lot of these numbers. And it's just, you know, in baseball, in every sport, you need to recognize that, like you said, you know, like, Miguel Andujar's 130 weighted runs created plus is not the same as another guy's 130 weighted created plus that same year.
Yeah.
It's just, then one stat can never explain everything.
Yeah.
It needs to be, but like, you can't base, you know, who's the best players in the league. Even the WAR. I mean, the WAR is supposed to be this amazing, all-encompassing stat, but there's a bunch of different types that have very different results. So who's the right one? You know, it's like, it just, you need to use different stats from different websites, from everything. Everything just has to, you need different perspectives on and different looks on everything. So that's it for the questions. Do you want to talk a little bit football, the openings? So today was Black Monday. Well, the day we were awake was Black Monday. Led to Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy both being fired from Chicago. Mike Zimmer, and I forget their GM's name.
Rick Spielman.
Spielman both being fired from Minnesota. Brian Flores being fired from Miami. I feel like I'm forgetting other coaches.
Fangio from Denver.
Yeah.
Las Vegas is still up in the air. Who knows what they're going to do with their interim coach. Houston might fire David Culley. That one's not confirmed yet. And the Giants, I think, with Joe Judge is the last one. And yeah. Dave Gettleman.
Gettleman retired. So there are three GM openings. Giants, it was reported Kevin Abrams is not in the running, which, all right. I know, like, I shouldn't be that happy about this because, like, there's still a lot of ways they can mess it up, but this is literally something that just, like, the Giant fan base did. Because, you know, John Mara wanted to hire Kevin Abrams. Like, he wants to keep in the family, all this. The only reason he's not hiring him is because he knows that he could not sell that to the fan base.
Yeah.
Like, that's impressive.
I don't think we need to, like, spend too much time talking about it just because, like, I think we all know it at this point. But, like, they're doing a lot better with the search than they did.
I love their search so far. Yeah.
2007 or 6 now. They still have a ways to go, but yeah, it's a step in the right direction. Like, no one wanted to see Abrams become a general manager. Yeah, that's really it. Like, it's a lot better than it's been. No,
I mean, they need, when you do a GM search, and this goes for Chicago, Minnesota too, you want to take guys that are unsuccessful organizations. The Giants candidate so far, two guys from Tennessee, the one seed in the AFC, one guy from Buffalo, who just won the AFC East, one guy from Kansas City, obvious, one guy from Arizona, two guys from San Francisco. Those are winning organizations, and you want them to bring a quality of those winning organizations over to the Giants. I really like Josiah and Adam Peters. I hope it's one of them. But Brian Flores got fired from Miami. Surprised a lot of people.
Yeah, I think.
What are your thoughts on that?
I think that comes down to QB disconnect, honestly, with Gruyere and Flores. I think Flores really wanted Watson, and I think the owner Ross and Gruyere still wanted to stick it out with Tua. Also, I think Flores really did a good job of masking up all the drafting deficiencies Miami had, because they threw away a lot of picks. And I think it's that simple. Basically, Flores produced, like, if you told me the Dolphins, after going 1-7, I think it was,
yeah,
it would finish the season 9-8 while Tua played like a borderline top 15 quarterback, I'd be really shocked, because their offensive line is garbage. They have one good wide receiver. There's not much on that team to be, like, positive about. They have a good defense, but, like, I don't know. I just feel like he wasn't dealt the best hand and got an unfair ending.
Yeah, I don't see how you chose Flores over Greer.
Yeah, and no, like, it's got to be like
it doesn't. It was clearly politics that Greer went out, but he's a bad drafter. Flores did a lot with a little. I don't think Flores is I don't think he's Belichick, but
no.
It's really hard to find a solid coach. Yeah. Forget a good coach. It's hard to find a solid guy. If you can find a solid guy who guys like playing for, which based on the Twitter reactions from a lot of Dolphins players, they were not happy about it.
Yeah.
Then you stick with that. And I understand. But at the same time, if your head coach is clamoring for a different QB and you want to stick with your QB, I understand moving on if you trust your GM. I just wouldn't trust the GM. Because this is the GM addressed to over Herbert. And
look what they're it's also pretty bad when you let go of a coach and that coach instantly becomes like a top three candidate on the market. Yeah. Like, that's just like telling you messed up. It's really simple. Like, it shouldn't be that hard.
Yeah. And so I think that was the biggest surprise. And then the other surprise was Judge staying with the Giants. Kind of a surprise.
I don't think that one's
confirmed.
Yeah, it's not done though. It's still a weird place to go.
I think the way that they, like, he said he didn't announce to the players. He told the coaches that he's staying, but I don't think that this was before he met with Mara. He told this to the coaches. I don't think that he's fully staying until the new GM. I don't think the new GM is going to fire him, because that's just not how you probably want to start your new relationship. But with your owner saying we want to keep this guy, and you say no.
Mm-hmm.
But if Mara says, listen, it's fully your choice, which I do think he may end up saying, I could see Judge going, so I wouldn't decide on that one just yet. But just don't – it's never a good idea to fire a GM and keep a coach. Because both Chicago and Minnesota fired the coach. Because the GM wants to choose the coach.
I don't think Judge comes back next year. That's just, like, my take right now.
Yeah, my gut feeling is that he doesn't, because – he was selling Judge Abrams. Multiple reporters have said that he was trying to sell the team, keep me, promote Abrams, and Abrams is out. So clearly that sell didn't work. And then, if he wanted Abrams, then he may not have trusted himself to fit in with one of these coaches. I do think I give him a hell of a round of applause for saying that he wants to be involved in the GM search, because that is so ballsy to be so bad at your job and then just say, give me more responsibility. Yeah. Like, that is, like, good for him. I doubt he is. I think that they're going to, like, honestly, they seem to be running. It seems like they understand that what they're doing is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to hire. I think Joe Shane, that's where I've seen a lot of people talking about. He seems to be a very high favorite. I read an article about him. He seems like a guy that Mara would fall in love with in an interview, just the way that they talk about his work ethic and stuff. And he's not going to keep Judge. There was a report last year that when the Browns had the opening, that they wanted Shane with David Cullen. And I could, if that's a package, and then you hire the GM and then you tell him, do whatever the hell you want with the head coach.
Yeah.
That's basically what you have to do. Damn it. But, yeah.
I think Chicago's is going to turn out really well. I know, like, the press conference they had today, that guy, I don't know what his name is, he sounded like an idiot. He was, like, talking about, like, his mom and stuff. I don't know. That was really weird. But they look like they're interviewing the right guys. I'm pretty sure they got both of the Bills coordinators for the head coach job. that interviewed them. They'll probably interview both the Cowboys coordinators later on. They interviewed two guys from the Browns front office for GM, which is a great move. I think that'll turn out pretty well. It's probably one of the more attractive jobs just because Justin Fields is there. The Broncos one, they're also, I think it's like a trend around the league, honestly. I don't think it's just like one team. They're all interviewing younger candidates, which is really like positive to see. Like, I'm pretty sure the Giants' oldest dude they interviewed for the GM spot's like 46, I think.
Yeah, Austin Ford's the only guy that I've seen reported that's like, that seems, and Rand Carthorne are both like, they're the only ones that are like at the highest position. The other, Peters, Wilson, Poles, Shane, and Cowden all are, have been described as like rising stars in the league, where they're young guys who have just moved up a lot in the past few years, which is the kind of guy that turns into a great GM. The one that's been a GM and hasn't been amazing at it isn't a great GM. You know he won't be. I agree with that. So that's the biggest question. There's three GM openings. That's probably the way it's going to stay. How would you rank them in terms of attractiveness?
So there's the Giants, Bears, and Vikings, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so, interesting. If I'd say, like, all right, well, I'm going to do, like, two again, just because I think it needs, like, a little nuance. Like, in terms of, like, competing now, Vikings, this one's hard. I'll say Vikings, Bears, Giants right now, just because the Giants don't have cap as of now. But like in terms of like actual general attractiveness, I'll say Bears, Giants, Vikings, because Vikings, you have an old not great quarterback that you're kind of like in poverty with right now, like you're not going anywhere. The Bears, you have Fields, but you know, you don't have your first round pick this year. Defense is getting really old. That whole roster is just really old. Then if you go to the Giants side, you know, second most draft capital this year. You can make cap space. You have, like, I don't know, two good players to work around. But you have a lot more flexibility, I think, give it, like, a year or so. But I just think the Bears would be more interesting just because, you know, you do have Justin Fields. Like, that's already a big piece set in stone right now. Like, the Giants don't have a quarterback. Like, Daniel Jones, like, he's a bridge at best now. Maybe they draft one this year. Maybe they don't. I don't know. But I think having, you know, even a prospect at quarterback makes a job that much more appealing than one without it.
Yeah, I would agree with both those rankings. I think you could make the argument that the Giants are closer to competing than the Bears, especially with them having two first-round picks, Bears having none. But it's close, again, with the cap space thing. But in terms of the future, I would agree it's Bears, Giants, and then a, like, solid gap for the Vikings. Like, the Giants, in terms of the future, are a very attractive job. Like, they don't have a quarterback, but you have two first-round picks this year. If you want, you can turn that into more to having multiple first-round picks next year if you trade back. Like, most likely you'll be able to do that. And then, you know, you turn that into multiple first-round picks next year, and then you can probably grab a quarterback. And also, the cap hell, like, if they want, and this is what I think they should do, is they can make 2022 the year where they sit with all the cap. Instead of pushing it back, they just say, okay, we're in cap hell, let's pay it all off now. And then let's move on to next year, and then you'll have cap space after that. So, like, they, like, you know, give it this offseason, you're not going to get any free agents, but you're going to have 5-7. And then next offseason, you will have definitely a high first round pick, because it seems going to suck next year because you're not going to have any free agents, and you're going to have two rookies, which won't be that impactful unless one of them's a quarterback that's insane. And You can probably get more picks, and you will also have guys to trade. You probably get something for Daniel Jones if you want. You probably get something for Saquon Barkley if you want. And then even if you want to clear some cap space, James Bradbury, Blake Martinez, these guys that are on these big contracts, you can probably get something for, and while clearing cap space. So I think that because they have assets to move. And they will be very soon a team with good draft capital and cap space because they're probably, because again, they're probably going to suck next year, and then they'll probably have cap space. So I think the Giants are a pretty attractive destination as long as you're not forced on a head coach.
Yeah.
But it's them and the Bears, because again, the Bears have nothing but a quarterback, whereas the Giants seem to have some okay, maybe somewhat pieces and no quarterback. But I mean, both teams are going to need a lot to build around. Mm-hmm. The Giants are going to need the quarterback to build around. The Bears are just going to need the around. But the Vikings, you know, like, they're in this weird phase of they're just a mediocre team. And it's really tough to get out of mediocrity. And, yeah. You know, like, Kirk Cousins is probably not a Super Bowl winning quarterback. So what do you do there? Because are you going to draft a guy? Are you going to trade Cousins? Like, what do you get for Cousins? Like, mm-hmm. I just don't think the Vikings are insanely attractive compared to the other two. But, if there's a GM opening, it's never that attractive of a position because there's a reason the GM got fired. But I think all three aren't horrid, but I would agree. I would go Bears, Giants, and then I think it's a somewhat of a gap before the Vikings.
Yeah, that's fair. I think the Bears, they do have other pieces besides, you know, Fields. Darnell Mooney eclipsed 1,000 yards as a receiver this year, which is something any Giants receiver can't say. They have Tevin Jenkins, a decent left tackle. I know not a Fetty, but they do have a couple other guys on that O-line that are, like, deep. Like, their O-line was actually, like, okay this year, honestly. Like, by pass block win rate, PFF grades, I'm pretty sure. But, yeah, the Giants just don't really have much going right for them right now. So it'll take, you know, definitely 2022 should just be like there. All right, we're going to suck here. Just like, it should just be that way. Like,
they should do what the Eagles thought they were doing entering this year and kind of give up on a year.
Yeah.
And it worked out for the Eagles. Like, you know, you still fight, whatever. It's really interesting that, like, they're interviewing Joe Shane, and I was just looking at his draft history with the Bills, and, like, Wyatt Teller, Cody Ford, there's just a couple picks in there that you're like, oh, the Giants absolutely should have made that pick at that time. And everyone knew it. Like,
Wyatt
besides Teller. Teller's six-round pick. Yeah. But
Teller wasn't unlocked until he got with Bill Callahan, I'm pretty sure, with the Browns. Because Callahan's a great offensive line coach. Like, there's a reason the Browns are, like, a top five O-line in the league.
But Cody Ford, especially, where, like, that was in the draft, I believe, that they traded up. They picked a nose tackle at 17 and then traded up for cornerback with massive personal issues. Like, it's just, like, I don't want to talk that much anymore. I mean, I don't even want to talk much more, like, wrapping up, but Dave Gettleman, man. This dude just had bad decision after bad decision and then gets a little send-off and a nice statement. I liked in the Giants statement, like, Mara thanked Gettleman, didn't mention anything of the past 5 years, just talked about his tenure under Ecclesi, and Steve Tisch said nothing good, just said, we know this team is a disappointment. Like, this isn't the Gettleman retiring statement. Like, that's just, and yeah, that's how he should be. Gettleman deserves no flowers. Like, this dude probably had the worst GM tenure in sports history. I don't know enough about other sports GMs, but, like, I can't think of one that I can't think of a GM to come in, have the assets he had, and just burn through them and win 19.
Like, games. The closest comparable in, like, our lifetime, at least, like, all sports, like, Isaiah Thomas with the Knicks, and even he, like, he was pretty bad. You know, he did, like, throw away draft picks, all that stuff, but I don't know.
He didn't have the second pick.
Gettleman had free reign. He had great opportunity, and he made the absolute worst out of it. Like, he somehow made an awful position even worse. Like, that, it's impressive, like, honestly.
The Giants could be competing right now.
Yeah.
Like, you look at, like, I mean, he had the second pick, the sixth pick, the fourth pick. I mean, and he did good on the fourth pick, so I'm not even going to kill him for that. But the second pick, the sixth pick, the 17th pick that same year, the sixth pick, and massive, and he went on three spending sprees, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And you can make the case he made zero good moves in the 2018 and 19 draft or in any free agent move. I don't think Bradbury had one good year. Martinez had one good year, then towards ACL. Like, I don't know if he's made any of the big contracts worked out. No. Like, I mean, he gave Nate Solder $15 million a year. And then he told people before this year that he believes in the offensive line more than them, and after neglecting to address it for 2 years. Like, it's just...
Yeah.
I'm happy it's done. Yeah. And hopefully to better things.
Yeah, it's done.
Nice.
It's done.
All right. Well, that's all we got, right?
Yeah.
Anything else?
Basically covers it all.
All right. Enjoy your football weekends, everybody. 6 games this weekend over 3 days, which is so cool. I love that they added that.
The Monday.
It's a really cool thing to add. The 17 playoff I was a little iffy on, but, like, I'm kind of coming around to it. It also makes that one seed, like,
really coveted,
It's cool to see that. And I just wish that there was a tie last night. That's all I can say. You want to blame somebody besides the Chargers defense? Daniel Carlson. Just shank it, man.
Yeah.
Like, just shank. Do it for us.
Yeah.
All right. That's it. Thanks, everybody, for listening. This is Nerd Speak. And bye.